Welcome to the audio podcast of The Table,
a new United Methodist community of faith taking shape at Central UMC in Sacramento, California.
The podcasts currently feature the messages of Matt Smith and Linda Duhirsu,
with a musical introduction by Anthony Coleman, our director of music.
Thanks for listening. Our scripture reading is from Luke chapter 12, verses 13 through 21 from the Message translation. Someone out of the crowd said, "Teacher, order my brother to give me a fair share of the family inheritance." He replied, "Mister, what makes you think it's any of my business to be a judge or mediator for you?" Speaking to the people, he went on, "Take care, protect yourself against the least bit of greed. Life is not defined by what you have, even when you have a lot." Then he told them this story. The farm of a certain rich man produced a terrific crop. He talked to himself, "What can I do? My barn isn't big enough for this harvest." Then he said, "Here's what I'll do. I'll tear down my barns and build bigger ones. Then I'll gather in all my grains and goods, and I'll say to myself, 'Self, you've done well. You've got it made and can retire now. Take it easy and have the time of your life.' Just then, God showed up and said, 'Fool, tonight you die, and your barn full of goods? Who gets it?' That's what happens when you fill your barn with self and not with God."
Singing, how deep is that river? How deep is that river? Yes, I don't want to know if it's yours or mine. I don't need to know if it's east or west. Before I put my fears to rest, I just want to know how deep. How deep is that river? How deep is that river? Yes, I don't want to know where it's coming from. I don't need to know where it's going to. Before I place my trust in you, I just want to know how deep. I just want to know how deep."
Every day, every passing second, your grace, like water, is on the move, bringing new life, baptizing your creation. Immersed in your Spirit, may we move within the cycle of your love, giving our lives like water to any who thirst. Amen. We're in a five-week worship series reflecting together on how deep God calls us to live into God's grace. And so the way in which we do that here in this community is to reflect on our commitments to each other and to God about rooting our lives in grace, in worship, and in prayer, and in growing in faith. And we do that in kitchen tables. And I invite folks that are visiting to take one of those blue books in the back called Blueprint for Discipleship. And we're in a six-week class right now, and we'll start another one soon. And that might need to be part of your journey as you continue over the next year. And then this morning we're focusing on reaching in love. And so whenever you think about reaching in love, you turn to The Economist, right? That's what I did. I turned to The Economist this week. And in an article about a year ago, I love the title of this article. It's called "The Economics of Self-Storage, The Golden Hoard, Why People Are Stupider Than Squirrels." That's the title. And this is what it says. "The best businesses take unpromising inputs and they conjure from them a stable stream of profits. Self-storage firms fall into this category. They offer space-strapped customers a secure nest in which to store things they don't need right now but can't bring themselves to throw away. They invest in land most developers would shun, and they use tenancy contracts that would make other landlords like Brenda shudder. Yet they're big business in America, where one in 10 uses one of our country's 50,000 storage facilities. It's a sector that has seen robust performance and rapid growth, they say. According to the Self-Storage Association industry body, who knew that they had a whole body? They have a body. It's a popular elsewhere, too. In Britain, last year, the growth was 8% in the number of stores that they had. So they identify two reasons why self-storage units are expanding so rapidly. And the first is that demand keeps growing. It turns out that we folks in the United States were quite mobile, and often we need temporary spots to stash our stuff while we line up to move around, like so many folks in our community have in just the last couple of months, one seated right over there. So we have this need to have it there, but it turns out that we're just kind of averse to throwing things away. We seldom chuck any of the rubbish out, is what they say together. The second reason, though, is that they have short-term contracts, but they end up working kind of like bank contracts. So you put your stuff in there, and then you forget about it. And so the stuff that you couldn't get yourself to throw away, you just keep in a storage unit, and you keep paying for that storage unit over time. They say in Britain that 37% of the space that's filled up with that stuff that was just supposed to be temporary has been there for over 3 years. I love this line. A cynic might compare human squirrels unfavorably to the wild sort, which usually remember to dig up their nuts come springtime. So the lesson that they offer for this, they call it the lesson of hoardonomics, and they say this lesson of hoardonomics is really clear. Don't store your stuff. Sell it. And then invest in the storage business, because there's a huge market for it. It turns out that Jesus had a very, very different call for us. It's upside down. It's countercultural. It's like really upside down in comparison to the world that we live in. And so I want to go back for just a moment to what Sarah shared from Eugene Peterson's translation of the Message. The farm of a certain rich man produced a terrific crop, and he talked to himself. That's what we do when we're thinking about these decisions, about where to store all of our stuff. What can I do? My barn isn't big enough for this harvest. And then he says, here's what I'll do. I'll tear down my barns, and I'll build bigger ones, and then I'll gather in all my grain and goods, and I'll say to myself, self, you've done well. You've got it made. Now you can retire. Take it easy. Have the time of your life. Just then, God showed up. Isn't that how it works? Like, I could do this, and just then, God shows up. Fool, tonight you die, and your barn full of goods, who gets it? That's what happens when you fill your barn with self and not with God. St. Augustine said it this way: God gave us people to love and things to use. Sin, in short, is when we confuse the two. You go back to the pronouns that are used in this. It's all I, my. And then I'm going to do this in self. I mean, you can't even, you talk to yourself, and I do this too. That's what's tough about this text, is you want to like put this out on someone else. But how many of us wonder, like, do we have enough? Do we need to tear something down so we can build something bigger? Jesus counters all that. Take care, guard against greed. Life doesn't consist in the abundance of possessions. Life is found as we fill our barns with God, not with self. Ultimately, the folks like me who decide to put stuff in storage, or the folks like that rich fool who are pondering whether they should just tear down their existing barns and build some bigger ones, I think ultimately we're all asking really similar questions. What gives our life meaning right now? And what's going to give our life meaning in the future? And what do we do about that? Will we ever really have enough? Those are really hard questions. And so we keep coming back here in community together, trusting that we find answers for the moment to those questions as we root our lives in grace and grow in faith and reach in love. Over the last couple of weeks, Linda and I have shared our journeys, or some of our journeys, about how we've grown in our own capacities, in our own deep commitments to God. And then on November 3rd, we're going to invite everyone to share together what our hopes are for growing in faith and reaching in love and rooting our lives in grace. We really hope that you'll take time, all of us, take time to prayerfully reflect on what that's going to look like for you over the next year. And then to write that down, because at least for me, I have to write some of these things down or I forget that I make those commitments. And then I just keep on keeping on. I forget the stuff was in storage and then 3 years has passed. So we write those things down as a way to hold ourselves. And this morning, we're going to turn to listen to some of the voices from our own church community about what it's like to live generously and to reach in love. So I want to take a moment here to turn to our first one. We're going to listen to Tim and Deanie share just briefly about giving and giving back and sharing and what that is like. So let's listen.
It's been a kind of a topic to discuss with money. Larry thinks that, you know, I earned everything, I worked hard for everything, and so it's our money. But to me, if it weren't for the Lord, I think a lot of these things would have totally gone differently, and I don't think I would be right where I am. So in that type of celebration and worship, I think of it that way, as giving back.
Just giving something, it's what can I share, not what can I spare.
What can I share, not what can I spare? It's a different kind of looking at it than that rich fool offered when he looked out over his barns and wondered what to do. The New Interpreter's Bible writes about this text in this way. Greed is the moral antithesis of generosity. The thought of what he might be able to do for those in need never enters the rich fool's mind. His innermost thoughts reveal that he has no sense of responsibility to use his abundance for the welfare of persons less fortunate than he. Greed has eaten away any compassion he may once have had. But I want to start by confessing how hard it is to share. It's really hard. We have a 4-year-old daughter, and it's really obvious how this is not innate in us, sharing, when I'm with her. So I want to invite us. Her voice is soft, and I'll do some translating if you can't hear it, but it's a short clip of Eleanor sharing a little bit about sharing with us. Let's listen.
Why is it important to share?
Because you have to share.
Why?
Because if other friends want to, then you have to share.
Have you ever shared anything? And what happened when you shared it?
Didn't get upset.
And were your friends happy when you shared it? What'd they do? How'd you know they were happy?
Because we played together.
Did you notice that at the beginning? Like, why do you share? Because I have to. Like, let's be honest. It's not like innate in us. Oh, I've received this abundance. I think I just want to share it with everyone. I think the truth is we're a lot more like that farmer. It's like, how do I knock these barns down so I can build bigger stuff? Like on some deep level, I do think that that's really inside of us. The economists would teach us even differently, and some of us have learned this from it. They'd have us sell the abundance and then clear out space so that we can make even more money. That's probably deeper in us than we recognize most of the time. And Eleanor says what happened when she shared was that her friends didn't get upset. And then they were able to play together. But it's easier to count our stuff than it is to count what an abundant friendship is. That's hard to quantify. And so sometimes I think we get trapped in just quantifying the materialism. Jesus calls us otherwise, but affluenza is real in our day, in our time. It's easy to track, right? You can track how much stuff you have, but relationships and community and purpose, reaching in love. It's not like you walk around and people know, like, that person has really reached in love today. But if you drive around in a fancy car, they know you're driving around in a fancy car. We all get caught in those traps. We all do. And God keeps calling us back. I think it's one of the reasons why we need deep community. We need one another to remind ourselves of that deep truth of God's abundance is found in relationships and in hope and in life together. So I want to invite us to listen to a few more voices from our church who talk a little bit about giving and how it changes us and about our relationships. Let's listen.
One of the things that, in the line of work that I do, I work with a lot of foster youth, and I hear a lot of our volunteers lament that times when they give either things or time to some of the kids that we come into contact with, they don't appear grateful, and they don't feel as if their gift has been appreciated or reciprocated or even acknowledged sometimes. As you can imagine, foster youth may not have all the abilities to show their gratitude. And so I try to do my best to express to them, and I would to my own child, that you have to find a sense of gratitude in your own life for the things that you have had or that you have currently, and not look to your giving and its impact on somebody else as being the thing that you seek as the reason that you give. It has to really come from within. And so if it comes from the heart, that tends to be the greatest gift, that you know that you were grateful for whatever it was you had and you gave it freely and hopefully, you know, to someone who really needed it, regardless of how they respond.
Well, I think anytime you give, you always tend to get a lot more back than what you give it. So whatever you give out, I always figure that you're going to get that much more back. Yeah. To me, the way that that's manifested, I think, has just made me connect more with people. Makes me feel, or makes me understand what the important things are in life. It's not just all about finances or stuff. It's really about the human connection and continuing to grow that.
Generous giving like changes you all. How does it shape who you are, yeah, or change you?
I think it just really helps to build that trust in God.
Yeah.
When you give away, you're kind of going out on a limb a little bit that like I'm not gonna need that later. And if I do find myself in a position of need, you know, some source will provide. And I think it just helps to kind of keep me accountable to God a little bit and continue to lean on God as opposed to thinking I can, you know, shore up my own defenses and live completely independently or self-sufficiently.
I would say that one of the few conversations about giving that tithing that I had with my parents would be with my mom, and she was sharing with me her experience with her own father, who my grandfather died long before I was born, so I didn't know him. But she shared with me that he was of the opinion that he should give to the church and be a quite regular giver. It was the cornerstone of the community, and she grew up in a small town in far northern California. And so he felt that it was very important that a person should tithe to the church, which was interesting because she shared also that she never saw the guy set foot in a church.
Wow.
But he thought that was important.
What is it that we think is important? And how do we make the decisions in our daily lives about how God shapes us to be and to be in relationships with others? A person named Peter Ray Jones has this provocative term for the rich fool in this, and says that the rich fool in this story is a practical atheist. Lives as though there is no God. And I think that's always a temptation for all of us as we ask that question is, what does God's love in our life mean in the ways that we live out our lives, in the ways that we are together? My own experience is that faith in God and my experience of God in community makes all the difference in the world. Because the truth is that I'm tempted more often than not to knock down the barns that I have and to try to build bigger ones. I struggle with ever wondering, like, is there going to be enough? And as I think about our daughter, I struggle with wondering, like, how do I figure out how to save enough for all of these things? And I think that is a hard question for all of us to hold. And I think Jesus's wisdom about this is profoundly challenging to me. Because it calls us to not invest ourselves in a secure financial future, but in the relationships that we dwell in right now. And to hold the promise of that as God's abundant love and grace. And it reminds me then to slow down and to wonder about the gifts that I receive, the abundant gifts of relationships and life that is all around. And as I do that, I feel really blessed to watch some of these folks share on the video. I feel really blessed to be in this community. See, sitting around us are folks who reach in love in subtle ways by giving their lives like water to folks who thirst. Someone in these pews right now comes to church every single week, usually after work or on Sunday around the kids' sports schedule, to mow the lawn outside. We don't think about that. We don't think about the lawn getting mowed. Someone ventures all the way over to Davis to share the gift of his voice as we try to begin a new worship experience there for 30,000 students, most of whom have only a couple of expressions of Christianity, and most of them are quite fundamentalist. And so we're trying to do something differently for students who've been burned and bored by church. And somebody in our community ventures over to Davis to share the gift of his voice. Someone came in early yesterday and then stayed really late. We celebrated the life of a 94-year-old man who was here in 1964 when we built this space. He helped to build it. He was reaching in love in that way. And someone among us, a young person, came in. She helped set up and then clean up in that space. Some folks among us are working right now to organize teams to run and to walk and to cheer at Run to Feed the Hungry. A family from our community moved all the way to Vietnam with their three kids to be teachers for 2 years because they felt that they needed to reach in love. Someone in these pews spends several hours every week making sure that our financial records are transparent and accountable and clear. Some of you have spent time organizing these last couple of weeks. We had a young woman who moved out to the East Coast with her partner, and about a week after she moved to the East Coast with her wife, her mom died. And some among us are organizing to help make sure that her dad is not alone as he tries to sort through that stuff that's there. Some of you are going to feel led to devote many, many hours to cleaning and cooking for 120 unhoused adults that are going to stay in our church after Christmas for a week. See, we reach in love in both formal and informal ways. We reach in love to support our family members, which sometimes, as I'm reminded, my parents are staying with us for a couple days. I can be worst at reaching in love to the people that I want to love the most. And some of us are reaching in love not just in these walls, but beyond them through our work as counselors, as teachers. We're called by God to figure out ways not to store up self, but to devote our lives to the love of God. Jesus calls us to that upside down way of life and says that life, true life, real life, will be found there as we fill our barns with God and not with self. And so our question this morning is, what is that going to look like for us in the days ahead, in the week ahead, and next year? Jesus calls us like this, I believe. Every day, every passing second, your grace, God, like water is on the move, bringing new life, baptizing your creation. Immersed in your spirit, may we move within the cycle of your love, giving our lives like water to any who thirst. And I want to share a final video of some of the voices, just a few people who are reaching in love in this space. So let's listen to their experiences.
But the one thing that stood out in my mind was when it was really bad times and they had to shut down some parts of the mill and they had to let people go, or at least wait a few days or weeks or whatever, when he knew the list of people, the list of those that were out of work. You heated your home with coal. Everyone had a big furnace, and you would order this load of coal, and it would come down a chute in a small place in your basement, And my dad had the names of the men who were not in working, and he paid to have coal sent to each one of them. And I thought, we knew that. And I can't tell you how old I was, but my sister said, you realize what he does? And it was anonymous. They didn't know. But I kind of think, I have to believe they did, because my dad was so well respected. And sometimes when there were, they had fights and everything else, didn't want people to go to work because they were laid off, when my dad went, they would say, let the old man through. They didn't touch his car. They didn't touch him. So that's it.
Usually it's with the kitchen tables. My big thing is to feed people. And that's my obsession. I just love feeding people. I think that's the parent side of me. I see other people give up their time. And I see that's even sometimes even more important than just money. But I think with some of our resources, with the backpack thing, with the winter sanctuary, that was giving of the people's time and cooking and taking care of our homeless. Financially too, I think there are all avenues that we can give, and each of them are equally important sometimes. And for me, it's kind of a growing experience. When you give, you kind of just, I think you just go on faith that the Lord will provide for you.
Last Christmas, I'm still a member of my home church back in Iowa. And when I was in junior high and high school, we had our junior high youth group, and we had, for high school, it was called CLASS, Christian Learning and Soul Searching. And I always thought of my CLASS youth group as, when I reflect on it now, as a place where I really came into my own as what it means to be someone who walks in the footsteps of Jesus. And so I like to make a contribution back to CLASS each year around Christmas time. And last year, my grandparents gave very generously to all of their grandchildren. And so I looked at that check that they had written me, and I decided who was going to be the recipient of some of those funds. And I sent a $500 check to CLASS at my home church. And I had no idea, but they were preparing for a Hades mission trip. And so my mom immediately calls me about 10 days after the check was in the mail and sent back to Iowa. And she says, you have no idea, but that just, your donation put them over what they needed to go on their mission trip.
We can never know how our reaching in love impacts folks around us. But we can always trust that God is calling us to let go of our need to store up our stuff and to turn ourselves to lives of generosity. And we call that reaching in love here at the table. And we're going to move into a time of prayer. And what I want to invite us to do is to move around for folks who feel led. We do this all the time during communion, but it's harder to get ourselves up sometimes when it's prayer because it's uncertain, like who's going to move and what's going to happen. I want to give us as much permission as I can to move around. Over on the side, underneath the stained glass, and in the back, and right here in the front for the really brave among us, are some stations for you to pray. And here's what I want to invite you to do. Inside of this, I want to invite you to take your hand and place it deep into that water. And inside are some small stones. The reality is that the needs in the world are overwhelming, whether it's just in your own house or on your own block or around the world, like the Schnacks have learned as they have moved for the last 2 years for these 2 years to teach. I don't know where God is calling you. I don't know how God is calling you to reach in love. But I do know that you're called to spend some time discerning that. So am I. And so we're going to move into this time of prayer. What I want to invite you to do is to take one of the stones with you. And you have some options. One is to just take it with you and hold it as a reminder of a person or a place that you need to reach in love to. And to just hold on to that. When you're ready this week, I'd invite you to place it somewhere. Somewhere that will represent to you that person or that place where you're called to reach in love. And so I want to invite you to take one of these stones with you as you feel led, to hold it until you're ready, and then to place it somewhere out in the world that God might be calling you to reach in love. It might be in your very own house. It might be in your apartment. It might be down the street, or it might be a long ways away. Some place that God is calling you. So let us move into this time of prayer, reflecting on how God might be calling us to reach in love.
And I could hold on, I could hold on to who I am and never let you change me from the inside. And I could be safe, oh, I could be safe here in your arms and never leave home. Never let these walls down, but you have called me deeper, you have called me deeper, and I'll go where you will lead me, Lord. You have called me deeper, you have called me deeper, and I'll go where you will lead me, Lord, where you lead me. I will be yours for all my life.
And I will be yours, oh, I will be yours for all my life, so let your mercy. Oh, and I will be yours, Lord, I will be yours for all my life, so let your mercy light the path before me. But you have called me deeper, you have called me deeper, and I'll go where you will lead me, Lord. 'Cause you have called me deeper, you have called me deeper, and I'll go where you will lead me, Lord. 'Cause you have called me deeper, you have called me deeper, and I'll go where you will lead me, Lord. 'Cause you have called me deeper, you have called me deeper, and I'll go where you will lead me, Lord.